People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. You're listening to Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trudgeon introducing you to this week's edition of People of Note. I'm sure you know by now that a hugely exciting opera is opening later this week right here in Cape Town, Verdi's magnificent opera called Aida, grand opera in the true sense of the word. And incidentally, it's nearly sold out, but we'll come back to that. But the director of this opera is Magdalene Minnar, a South African soprano, director and producer, well known in the music industry for setting new trends and challenging conventional boundaries. And we'll hear lots about that as well. As well as a well-versed scholar in classical music, Magdalene founded Bibliotheque Productions in 2010, providing a platform for artists and theatre makers to collaborate on classical music productions. She has been creating innovative musical and theatrical experiences since 2001. And as a soprano, Magdalene won the Mimi Kurtzer Scholarship Competition as a young singer and has since sung over 30 operatic roles. And Magdalene serves regularly on competition panels and juries, both locally and internationally. So, Magdalene, welcome. Welcome to People of Note.
Thank you very much, Rodney.
We're catching you just between rehearsals, aren't we?
That's right.
And you're very close now to opening. Well, in fact, you open this week, so it's a terribly exciting time.
It is an incredibly exciting time, and we are running around, and it is all very, very, very palpable that we are opening this grand and big opera.
But it's interesting, we speak about it as being a grand and big opera, but what's interesting about it, Magdalene, don't you agree, is that it's also so intimate in so many parts, like the third act, for example.
Absolutely. Act 3 and Act 4 almost become impossible to direct if you've created all this pomp and circumstance in Act 1 and 2,
right,
and suddenly you have basically a bare stage with three people, you know, in a love triangle. And that has always been a big consideration in terms of the design and in terms of visually keeping things going and the narrative and the inner kind of worlds of the characters. So it's, in fact, quite a challenging opera to direct in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Because it has arguably one of the biggest crowd scenes in the world of opera, with the grand march sequence that everyone knows so well. And yet, as you say, you're down to three people in a love triangle and very delicate orchestration in the Nile scene with the aria O Patria Mio and so on. This sort of unbelievable contrast for you as a director.
That's exactly it. And Kamal Khan and I, who's conducting, I mean, he's a well-known conductor in South Africa, we keep talking about this kind of juxtaposition of musical language and also the fact that Aida kind of, you know, bellows her lungs out in Acts 1 and 2.
It's a big role, isn't it?
And then in Act 3, it's all this kind of thinly sparse music, and it's very floaty, and it's an incredibly hard role to sing.
I believe so. I believe it's one of the really difficult Verdi heroines.
Right up there. I mean, maybe one of the top three biggest and most difficult Verdi heroines.
Because then, if we just look at that through Act 3, there's all the drama with Aida and her father and Amneris and Radomir's. But then the end of the next act, in when they're sentenced to death and they discover each other in the cave, they've got to sing an aria which, at the end of the evening, so soft and so sustained and so high, must be technically very difficult as well.
I actually coached the entire opera with Brenda Ryan, who I believe you've interviewed. And in that, I said, Aida's not my voice type, so I would never sing it, but I'm so glad I'm not singing this opera, because this is murder. To then have to die for about 3-4 minutes in the softest, most kind of sparsely composed music, and it is so beautiful when
and
it's
so
sung
exposed.
Well, and incredibly exposed, and so effective. That's what made Verdi such an incredible genius. He just gets it.
Magdalene, what made you want to direct this opera of all operas?
Well, I would say that the first reason is that I had a very strong impression of the opera. I grew up in Pretoria, and I had some, you know, I had a love for opera from quite a young age. I was in the State Theatre Chorus way back when Brenda was still there for a little bit. And I saw all these people on stage, like Dion van der Walt and Hanlie Stapela and all these great singers, South African singers. And I remember when I was in Standard 7, there was an Aida at Loftus Versfeld, which was the big rugby stadium in Pretoria. And I wormed myself in to become an usher. And so I saw two or three of the performances with the zoo animals and I don't know how many hundreds of chorus members on not stage field. But I just have this impression in my mind, and it completely took my breath away night after night. And I live with that memory. And for that reason, I've always wanted to revisit it because I have the childhood memory of it. But there's also a different reason that I want to do it. This is one of the only operas of the canon that are written about Africans. And by Africans, I'm including Egypt and Ethiopia.
Yeah, which are African, let's face it.
And we've seen a lot of very kind of sad incidences where Caucasians are cast as Ethiopians and then they have to wear all this black makeup. And I just find that so atrocious.
Like the Othello
exactly.
situation.
Yes. Exactly. Yes. And I just felt, you know what, we're Africans. Let's just retell the story in an African way. And then the kind of futuristic angle entangled itself in the concept. And now we're with Afrofuturism. But it is very much an African take on the story. And Gregory Makoma, who is my choreographer, we've had a couple of discussions about appropriation and the fact that we are South Africans and now we're telling a North African and then, you know.
The other end of Africa, in fact.
It's the other end of Africa.
Cairo,
and
we are
polar opposites, but we are on the right continent and we have that spirit. And what you will see in the choreography is, I don't think, has been seen ever in a production of Aida. It is incredibly, incredibly visceral. And I watch the ballet in Act 2, and every time I just hug Gregory and I say, this is what it should be.
Yes.
This is what it is.
And there are three ballets, I think, in the opera. There's
That's
the ballet
right.
in the middle of the temple scene. There's the one in the Aida, just before the Aida Amaneris theme.
That's right.
Duet. And then there's the ballet, the big ballet.
The big
in
ballet,
Grand March.
Which is 5 minutes of dancing, which is quite hectic.
Mm-hmm.
And what a lot of productions do is they have lots of solos because it's easier to dance that way. In our case, it's 13 people dancing their hearts out. And it's really quite phenomenal and
Marceline,
exciting.
We have to whet our musical appetite now. And I think you've chosen the Grand March, the main section of
Indeed.
The Grand March, as the first. Shall we do that now? And
I'd
just
love
be
that.
Reminded about the big crowd scenes and one of the most famous scenes in opera. part of one of the great moments in opera, the Grand March from Aida by Giuseppe Verdi, there with the Vienna Philharmonic and chorus conducted by Herbert von Karajan. And the first choice of my guest, Magdalene Minnar, who is directing Cape Town Opera's production of Aida, which opens this week. I, for one, can't wait. It's always been a great favorite of mine. But just listening to those trumpets there, does Cape Town have those Egyptian, or what they call Aida trumpets, Egyptian trumpets?
Yes, the Trombe Egizi. So we, in fact, have four in Cape Town, and they used to belong to Mike Blake, who was a good friend of, I think, all of us, who played trumpet in the orchestra, and he had them made, and they are at the moment being dusted off and serviced for our production. They're very long, kind of thin, they almost like vuvuzela-like trumpets. I did for a moment say that if we can't find them, that we will do this on the vuvuzela, but I was vetoed.
Oh, good. I mean, oh no.
But they're a single valve trumpet, and yes. I think it's every trumpeter's dream to play an Egyptian trumpet at one
stage in their life. And it's got a special sound, hasn't it? A
very piercing sound. Piercing sound, yes.
And so are members of the orchestra playing that, the Cape Town Philharmonic?
Yes, I believe one permanent member and then three ad hoc
members. Are they going to be on stage or off stage?
They are semi on stage.
Okay, right. Because sometimes they're off stage and you don't see these wonderful trumpets.
No. You will most certainly see a part of the trumpet.
Okay. Now, Magdalene, just getting back to you as director, and we were talking earlier about the intimate part and the grand part, controlling or imagining a huge scene like the Grand March, which gets bigger and bigger and bigger as it goes on. That's, we played the famous bit, but then all the Ethiopian prisoners come in, there's the big ballet sequence, and then the father meets Aida, and there's a huge, massive crowd on stage. Is that tricky to direct? I don't know how else to ask you.
It is
all those people.
Yeah, it is. It is tricky in a way. It's easier than directing three people on stage because you can plan ahead quite far because your bodies are more static. Not that the production is static at all. I mean, that's something that I'm trying to actually not do, is to just stand and sing, because that becomes very boring. But in a way, with a bigger crowd, you can do pre-planning. But what happens in the room is that once you have the full picture for the first time, you can see where the gaps are in the story, or you can see where the gaps physically are, which you can't plan with a scale model. So there is a lot of thinking on your feet that, you know, goes hand in hand with big crowd scenes. I mean, with directing in general. But luckily, I have Gregory by my side throughout the process. So often it is that we suddenly have to create an extra sequence of movement because it looks too static. But you can really only see all of those gaps, I call them, when you're in the room and you're busy rehearsing. But that's also part of the magic of a rehearsal room, is that there are moments where we go, I'm so sorry, guys, that doesn't work. I need 5 minutes. I need to think about this. And for all that I like pre-planning and know exactly who stands where and thinks what and goes there, there are moments where it just doesn't work the same way that it did in your mind for the months that you prepared.
I think people may not realize that there's a big room here where you do your rehearsals for opera here on the third floor up there.
Exactly.
And that you also very often work off a scale model, first of all, of the sets and scenery. And as you say, only when you see the real people on the real spaces do you get a sense of whether it's going to work or not.
Exactly. There are different layers. So the first layer would be getting floor plans and kind of working. I have my own way of working with a tiny little scale model set that I make. In this case, it was 3D printed for me, which was really nice. And then you either work with a scale model, which is on a set kind of scale. I worked with a program, with a computer program, which you just have a little bit more kind of control over which view you can see sight lines. The audience is always very important for me, that the person who bought the cheapest ticket has a good experience and that they don't suddenly not see half of what's being staged, you know.
Right, good point.
That for me is very important. So with this program, I can actually, you know, turn things around. I can turn it. You know, I can look at it from the top. I can look at it from
the
side.
Amazing what you can do these
days. Is really fantastic. Yeah, But in essence, a lot of the planning is on paper and it is in my head.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been working on this? When were you told, Magdalene, we are going to do Aida, would you like to direct? I know that you are the artistic director at Cape Town Opera. So
yes, I suppose that that makes the process slightly easier, but it is a very expensive production. So I did have to do a certain amount of begging from the board and the and our CEO, Alex Gabriel, which took about 2 years or 2.5 years.
As long as that. Wow.
This has been a passion project for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I got the go ahead about, I would say, a year ago. So it's been a year of kind of hard, intensive working on the project.
And then when did you start rehearsals? When did you start working?
The actual rehearsals, we had 4 weeks of staging rehearsals and then a technical week. And then before that, we had music rehearsals. Mm-hmm. So it's really not a long time that you have to put all of this together.
Yes. It's not a short opera. I mean, it's not over long like a Wagner opera, but right. It's not short.
It's not a short opera. And it's also because there is, you know, we have 52 chorus members, which for any Aida is a small amount of people, which makes it very difficult to also decide which entity is on stage because Verdi wanted it in a certain way. So there we had to be quite clever with who is who in this particular zoo. But all in all, kind of works itself out in the rehearsal room.
In a moment, I'm going to ask you to explain more of your African futuristic view as a director of this opera. But let's take another music break, and we're moving away from Aida now to Masibane Cecilia Rangwanashe, who is just stunned us all with her four last songs at the City Hall a few weeks ago. And now you've chosen her to sing. What is she going to sing?
I chose her firstly because she was a young artist with Cape Town Opera, and I just think that she's a phenomenal talent.
And she's having such a success overseas.
She's having an incredible success overseas. And she is going to sing the very, very beautiful Schubert song, Gretchen am Spinnrade.
Oh,
the lovely, lovely voice of Masibane Cecilia Rangwanashe, singing that well-known song by Schubert, Gretchen am Spinnrade. And it was the second choice of my guest, Magdalene Minnar, who is a South African soprano, but she's here as a director on a major, major operation directing Verdi's grand opera, Aida. So, Magdalene, I want to talk to you now about the physical look. You go on about African futuristic and all that. And so what can we expect without giving too much away? Is it going to be ultra-modern? Are people going to run out of the house screaming?
Hopefully not. I would say that this production is futuristic without trying too hard, if that makes any sense. We opted not to go for any kind of gimmicks. And I think that it's been put together in an incredibly beautiful way, where we are not assuming too much about the future, but we also know that it could go, you know.
Ah, I see what you mean. Okay.
Dystopian or utopian. Yeah, so we aren't really making much assumptions, but there are some moments where, for instance, a nuclear bomb gets taken out where you see, okay, this is where the world has headed. And obviously with current political, you know, affairs, I got a lot of inspiration, for instance, the role of the king, which then informed the story. So our set is monumentally minimalistic, which was a term that my brother Louis Minnar came up with.
But now, wait, I believe there's a family connection here with the designers of the set.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes, so this will be our fourth big production that we do together.
You and your brother.
This is me and my brother and his wife, Nadine. So it's Louis and Nadine Minnar. They are doing the set design on this project. And like I say, we've worked together before, and they're really, really good designers. Nadine builds a lot of the operas and musicals sets. Through her company. And a fun side fact is that she says that in the 18 years of building sets, this has been the biggest set that she's built. And yes, it is quite large. So it's large, but it's not, in terms of the design, it's quite minimalistic in aesthetic, which is very, very beautiful. And there's a lot of light fixtures built into the set, which makes it very, I'll say, futuristically sexy in a way. And then the use of the animation with the set is where the magic really happens, because the set was built to be mapped onto. So the projections are mapped onto these scenic pieces, and it becomes different worlds for each scene.
Oh, interesting. Also, I gather that there's a lot of sort of geometric shapes and things with the sets and costumes.
Yes. So in the end, the set is almost like a Lego set. You can use it in various different ways. So each set piece, and they are massive set pieces, has four or five sides, and they get used in various different, permutations of what you can do with these. Mm-hmm. I'm calling them Lego blocks.
That's a good description, by the way. I haven't seen anything yet, so I'm not talking from a point of view of having seen anything. But what then about the costumes? Because that's the next obvious one. Because what I have seen, some pictures of the costumes, they are also very futuristic, African futuristic.
Yes, so there were a lot of discussions, and what you would have seen was our pre-production shoot, which is not actually the costumes that exactly they will be wearing. This is always a bit of a chicken and egg situation when you're doing a pre-production shoot for an opera, is that a lot of the pieces don't exist yet, and yet months before you have to have some form of visual to show people.
Yes.
So you won't see exactly what you've seen on social media, but that's the reference for the costumes. And so in my world that we've kind of created, is Egypt has become this megalomania country with this mad king, and the costumes are very much what we are imagining to be high fashion of the time. So in the triumphal march, for instance, we don't see the zoo animals or the animals that were stolen from Ethiopia, or the spoils of war that are big brought back. We see delegates from around the universe to come almost on a kind of a very strange fashion parade in these absolutely magnificent costumes. And at the same time, the Egyptian people, which are in the score referred to as the popolo, which is just you know, the people, the standers-by, are also there in their high fashion. So this has been quite a nice challenge for our costumier, Roman Hunt, who comes from a fashion background, to play around with fabrics and, you know, looks and, you know, what do the shoes look like? What does the makeup look like? What do you wear on your head? So that's been quite a fun exercise, also quite scary, but but all in all, just visually incredibly striking. And then for the Ethiopians, this world that we've created, they are more of the earth. They still eat real food. They grow crops. They've gone, you know, into the magic of Africa and very kind of spiritual people. And maybe they can speak to each other by telepathy. You know, we've kind of created these very interesting, uniquely African world. And they wear a lot of natural fibers. So it would be shells and beads and leather and hemp.
It must have been great fun and so creative to put all this together, to design these costumes and then see them come to life on the people.
Absolutely. But I mean, it's an incredibly massive job for the costume team, and they've been really doing a stunning job. But
and what about this thing called immersive lighting design, creating a stage that is both grand and intimate?
Well, that's the thing with lighting design is I always say you can do what you want, but in the end, when the lighting, you know, comes to play, it can either make or break the show.
Absolutely.
And that is why I work with Oliver Hauser. We did Tosca together, which I thought was really exciting in terms of lighting. And we have kind of found each other creatively. He doesn't resist mad ideas. And he's a collaborator of note. I mean, we had lots of conversations around how the set plays into the lighting, how that plays into the choreography, how that plays into the staging as a whole. So in the end, the lighting becomes such an important kind of connector of everything that's happening on stage. And because we work with a lot of mapping and animation, the lights are very specific. So you can't do just kind of big showy lights because it will wash out all the animation. So there's a very strong sense that there's a balance, which I just love. The whole thing is just such a big, wonderful collaboration.
Our next piece of music that you've chosen is Posenta Phthah, which is the temple scene, which for me is one of the great scenes in opera, certainly in this opera. Because it is so, I remember when I went to Egypt and went to the Karnak Temple, this music was just racing through my mind with a priestess high in the distance up near the altar and the monks closer. And it's a lovely part for that soprano, isn't it, that sings the priestess.
It's absolutely stunning. And we are so blessed that Kayakazi Madlala, who is one of our newest young artists, she had just in February made her debut as the high priestess at the Royal Opera and Ballet. So she just did the role there. She also, coincidentally, is singing as the school's version that we are doing on the other days of our main performance.
Yes, I'll ask you about
she's
that.
Singing Aida, and she does it very beautifully.
Oh, gosh.
So I would say that's a talent to look out for, Kayakazi Madlala.
Well, let's do some appetite whetting here. And once again, from that Karyan set, this is the opening sequence of the temple scene, which, as you will hear, is very soft, and the various perspectives they've got on the recording as well.
Thank you.
Well, there we leave the temple scene, just the opening we heard there. And at that moment where we stopped, one of the ballets starts on stage, which is jazz art, isn't it? Are they doing the ballets?
Yes, 13 of jazz arts members and choreographed by Gregory Makoma. It's absolutely exquisite to see. And what we've created for them in the scene is that I call them the oracles. So they're not just dancers. They become this temple entity.
I see.
Taking part in the rituals. Very beautiful.
In the rituals, yes. It's such a ritualistic piece anyway. Mm. Isn't it amazing? Many people have said how extraordinary it is that Verdi managed to create such an Egyptian sound where he would never have been to Egypt and had no contact with Egypt. And yet his music, like this dance scene, sounds very Egyptian.
It's extraordinary. It's, yes. I mean, one wonders what he was, you know, kind of reading and listening to at the time. Mm-hmm. I believe he was listening to a little bit of Wagner at the time, which was a little bit of an influence, but I doubt that was the Egyptian influence at all.
Well, he used those leitmotifs because both Aida and Amneris have their own themes which arrive at various parts of the opera when they come on stage. Moving away, you mentioned just before we took that break, Magdalene Minard, by the way, is my guest. She's directing this rather extravagant production of Aida, which opens this week, in fact. But now you're also doing children's concerts. You're taking this to schools, aren't you, this very production? Or are they coming here?
They're coming to Artscape. Yes. So we're doing two performances in between our main performances. And this is with our, we call them our school's cast. They are also the understudies for the production. Phenomenal bunch of singers, I might add. And they are performing an 80-minute version of the opera in these school's performances. It's matinees. They're at 11 in the morning, so it should be quite easy to get to. And the aim is to really bring this opera to children who won't sit through a three-hour evening at night. And we are opening it to schools, and these tickets are not available on web tickets. They are available through us, Cape Town Opera, personally. But I really do encourage, if anyone does have a school that wants to come and, you know, take part in seeing this phenomenal production. Like I say, 80 minutes of it in full costume with the full chorus, the whole shebang. The only difference is that it isn't with the orchestra. It's with piano.
Okay. But it will introduce a lot of people. And that's what you've done a lot in your life, haven't you, Magdalene? You've been obsessed, may I say, with getting opera out there and with youth and education of youth. Into
yes.
music and opera. It's been one of your big things.
I think I'm obsessed with my children. And through that, because I'm so passionate about audience development and getting more people to listen to classical music, when my son was born, I just realized that I'm going to have to put my energy into getting the moms and dads around me with small children interested. So this thing happened where I was just producing a lot of concerts and productions for younger audience members. And so it has become quite a big focus apart from, you know, developing older audience members.
The full audience. And there's this thing called Opera Blocks, which has run a few times, hasn't it? Opera for babies and small children. And that's happened a few times. And has that been successful?
It's been a massive success,
really?
I must say.
That's so good to hear.
It was the first thing that I started when I took the position of artistic director in 2022, and it's grown from strength to strength. We now actually taking it a little bit further. So instead of just keeping it here in the theater, we are bringing it to various communities and going to libraries, which I've always just loved libraries, and I feel that every child should spend a lot of time in a library. So this really has been, it's been a big moment for us to get this whole formula right. And so we're doing our next production called Forest Friends. Very, very sweet production.
A good title for children.
Yeah, with a narrator and beautiful singing and beautiful costumes. And it's very immersive and it's picnic style. So children sit on blankets and on their parents' laps. And we encourage the smallest of small babies up to, you know, 4 or 5-year-olds to come and watch.
Oh, my.
It's really very special little concerts.
And then just looking ahead, Magdalene, before we get back to Aida, there are two things happening later in the year. I know there's an opera event, a Cape Town opera event involving the Duet Gala, and also there's a Zeitmacher event.
Yes, so the Zeitmacher event is really going to be, you know, kind of the event of the year that right. we are doing in collaboration with the Zeitzmacher, where we're kind of taking over the entire building. And it's also in collaboration with Alight Events, who do very big kind of immersive events. So that's going to be a very, very special one to diarize, and that's in September. And then on the 4th of October, we are doing our annual duet endowment gala concert together with our sister company, the orchestra, the Cape Town Philharmonic Orchestra. And for that, we have young, very fabulous conductor Gaetano Lococo coming to conduct. And we also have two South Africans. One was a young artist with Cape Town Opera, Golda Schultz, and Jacques Imbrailo.
Yes, both of whom made such big names for themselves.
Absolutely. So yeah. Very, very exciting concert to look out for on the 4th of October.
Now, the next piece of music, I knew we'll run out of time eventually, but we haven't run out of time yet, Magdalene, is far away from opera. It's a bassoon concerto by Mozart. Now, you've got a bit of a story about this, haven't you, involving your children?
Yes, so I played the bassoon in high school. I have a grade 7 in bassoon. I'm very proud of it. It's an instrument that I've gotten great joy from. And as I was looking for a playlist to put my very energetic daughter to sleep every night while I'm trying to direct an opera, I made her a playlist of beautiful kind of slow Mozart numbers in the hopes that she would eventually fall asleep. And this was one of them. And every time I listen to it, I feel such nostalgia. And I just wanted everyone to hear it because I feel like the bassoon is a very undervalued instrument.
That was part of the slow movement of Mozart's Bassoon Concerto, and another choice of Magdalene Minar, who is my guest. And we talked about looking ahead, Magdalene, just now before we get back to Aida. And I see that you've got an opera in the Theatre on the Bay, of all places, Peter Turin's Theatre on the Bay, and the lovely Rossini opera, The Barber of Seville.
Yes, well, a couple of years ago, we had to do something outside of Artscape, and I spoke to Peter Turin, who was very keen on the idea of doing L'Elisir d'Amore.
That's right, it was that, yes.
At the Theatre on the Bay, and so the relationship with that little theatre started, and really, it is such a stunning venue. It is intimate without feeling small, mm-hmm. and it has actually great acoustics, and we have been taking smaller scale productions there just because we have a different audience on that side of the mountain, and it's been doing really well. And I thought that the pairing of The Barber of Seville as a kind of a bonsai production together with Sylvain Strike, who just won Fleur de Cup for Best Director, because she also has directed quite a few works in that theatre. It just kind of all the dots just connected, and it's a very, very exciting production for us in August.
One question I've been meaning to ask you since we started this program almost an hour ago is, I introduced you as a South African soprano. Please tell me that you are, in fact, still singing.
I am. Oh, yes, good. I am still singing.
What a relief.
Yes, I could never let that go. It's just, I get very depressed if I don't sing.
Oh, good. No,
so I do keep it going. And one of these days, I'm going to come to you with my new album of prayers from around the world and say, Rodney, please play it on the radio.
Well, please do that, Magdalene. Please do that. But just finally now, and thank you for being so enthusiastic about this, Aida, which sounds to me as though it's going to be something very special this year, let alone in the history of Cape Town Opera. But just getting back to that briefly, the booking is going very well, isn't it? And I think you said people must book, otherwise they're going to lose out.
Yes, there are two nights that are still with some capacity, but we are very close to selling out three of the five performances. So I do implore people, if they want tickets, they should rush to web tickets, because it is going to sell out. And we have not seen this uptake of ticket sales for an opera in a good many years.
Yes. Well, your description of it, with its futuristic, it's African, it is an African opera, let's face it, from Egypt. But it sounds, I can't wait to see it. And it opens on Friday, the 23rd of May, here at the Artscape Opera House. And please do book, because it sounds as though it's going to be a thing. And it's got a large orchestra as well, apart from the large chorus on stage. And Kamal Khan is conducting. And I was talking to Magdalene Minar, who is the director. Magdalene, your last piece is the closing scene, the very sad closing scene of Aida. Do I need to ask you why you've chosen it?
Well, I suppose it's just one of the most beautiful themes and melodies and standalone pieces of the entire opera. And I think that Verdi wrote it so brilliantly because they are busy dying in each other's arms. And I won't tell you how they die in my version of the opera, because you have to come and see it for yourself. But it is, I think that we're creating quite a poignant moment there.
And with theater, those high strings that Verdi uses in the orchestra, it's so magnificent. So we'll hear Renato Tebaldi and Carlo Bergonzi with Karajan in the closing moments of this great opera. And Magdalene Minar, thank you very much, and best of luck. I'm sure it's going to be a stunning success.
Thank you, Rodney. Thank you so much.
Oh,
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions. FMR.